Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome to the show. In case you don't know, this is a faith and values program that tries to intersect faith and values with different issues and people in our culture, locally and globally. It's always a pleasure doing the show. Thank you for joining me on a weekly basis. Many thanks to my friends at Perry's Fine Jewelry and Ruth Chris Steakhouse for your sponsorship of the show. You sponsoring this show allows it to be on now 20 plus years. It's hard to imagine, but it's been a blast. Thank you again. Well, my guest today is Rich Sidori. Rich is the general counselor for Waste Kip. It is a local company, probably larger even than that. I'll let him talk about that in just a second. I wanted to have him come on the show and talk about how a business person, a lawyer involved in a rather large company, can make a difference in serving this community and beyond. Something we all can do, something I believe that we all can do, and I'm appreciative of Rich's being on the show with me today. Rich, thanks a lot.
You bet. Thanks, David.
Well, let us get to know you a bit. Where are you from, your background, your family? Let us have a glimpse into your life.
Sure. So born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So, you know, as Ed Billick and I were talking earlier.
Yeah, he's my producer of the show and a native Pittsburgher and just adamant about Pirates, Steelers, anything Pittsburgh.
That's right. So it runs in your blood. Spent all my formative years there. Mom and Dad were very avid churchgoers. We went to a Lutheran church in the eastern suburbs of Pittsburgh. And I grew up in the eastern suburbs in the city and then went to University of Pittsburgh undergrad and law school. And so I was one of four kids, and my mom is still living in Pittsburgh. My dad passed 10, 11 years ago. So we moved to Charlotte about 6.5 years ago, my wife and I, and at the time our two kids. And so it was for my job. I came here to be the general counsel of Waste Kip, and I've been a general counsel for roughly 15 years now. Mm. So, you know, it's been a great ride. It really has. It's been a wonderful career. It's been a great way for me to be a practicing attorney. I like being in-house much better than being in a law firm, mainly because of exactly what you're talking about, the ability to be involved in a business, the ability to act in achieving business goals, and then combining that, obviously, with my faith.
Hmm. So, Waste Kip does what? Help us know
your
company.
Little did I know when I looked at garbage trucks whenever I was a kid that I would eventually become a garbage man. And so so what we do is we manufacture equipment for the waste industry. So if you live in Charlotte and you roll a two-wheel plastic garbage can down the end of your street,
which once is
a week,
most of the population.
Most of the population, right. We operate that business under the brand name Toter, T-O-T-E-R. So for everyone who's listening, when they go out sometime this week and grab that garbage can, if you look at the side, which a lot of people don't, but when you will, this will prompt you to think about it, see if it's a Toter can, because we make a lot of those in the U.S. and in Mexico and sell those. And that's roughly half of our business. The other parts of the business are making steel containers. And so everything from roll-off dumpsters that you would see at a demolition or construction site, or the smaller steel containers you see behind every single building out there.
Hmm. So you are the general counsel, which means you make sure that everything that operates in your company does so legally.
Correct.
You have to do all the HR stuff, I would assume, as well?
Well, we do have a CHRO who handles the HR stuff. But from what my daily interaction is it's really establishing here's the guardrails. Here's the bumpers on either side that I need to make sure we operate inside of.
Risk management, that basically it?
Clearly,
yeah.
Yes.
And in today's litigious culture,
yes,
that is particularly challenging, I'm sure.
It is. It really is.
So what do you enjoy most about your job?
Really the variety. I mean, it really is. I sometimes jokingly say I'm an inch deep and a mile wide. So I have to understand everything that's going on. I have to understand all aspects of all laws that are out there. And so it really is the variety of what hits my desk on a daily basis.
I would imagine it's a daily challenge, something new almost every day.
It is, but I will balance it with the fact that I get up excited to get to work every day. I love what I do. I love my job, and it's a fantastic company.
Well, good for you, because a lot of people don't have that privilege of waking up being excited about going to work, and you have that privilege. Rich Sidori is my guest today. Rich is the general counsel for a company called WasteQuip. I have him on the show today to talk about faith values in the workplace. He has some interesting perspectives on that. Rich, when we come back, let's take a moment and pause and talk a little bit about our country's situation today with litigation, but some with some of the things that have happened with the Kavanaugh effect that we had a couple of months ago, and look at what's our future and your perspective on some of those issues through faith and values in our culture today. I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Welcome back to the show. My guest is Rich Sidori. Rich is the general counsel for a company called WasteQuip. He is here today to talk about faith and values in the workplace, how people who are in the workplace can really make a difference in the world. We'll get to that subject in a little bit. But first, Rich, during this segment, I wanted to talk about the litigation that goes on in our society. And let me first of all ask, why do you think we live in such a litigious society?
Well, you know, I mean, it's obviously a very complicated matter and a very complicated issue. You know, not to throw stones at my brethren attorneys that are out there, but I will tell you, there's a lot of lawyers. There are a lot of attorneys who are in the United States right now. You know, that's obviously part of what's driving this. It's an economic issue. You know, the other thing that we will see on a frequent basis is, you know, and I hate to generalize, but a lack of accountability that we will sometimes see, where something happens, someone, you know, is disadvantaged, or something happens to them, or they're injured, and there's a need or a desire to blame someone. So somebody has to be at fault. You know, my wife, oftentimes says, you know, sometimes they call it an accident because it's an accident, and there's really no one to blame and nobody at fault. But it really, you know, we've moved into, certainly in the legal world, a litigious culture where you want to blame someone, you want to have somebody accountable. You know, we oftentimes will get sued as a company for things that we have no connection to. You know, someone will say, well, you designed this product this way, or you did this. And, you know, oftentimes our defense is, well, no, you did something you should not have been doing. Or you know, you didn't do something insofar as maintenance or something along those lines that you should have been doing. And so it's not a way that we designed something or a way that we manufactured something that allowed this to happen. You did something that was clearly wrong. It's oftentimes very difficult for people to accept that, because they really want to be able to assess blame on someone else.
And also the money issue is surely a part of it, and we can't deny that.
Correct. Yeah. Correct.
Well, when people have such a problem with accepting responsibility like our culture has today, when victimization's almost become a calling card for people, you can see how it's easy then to make litigation the natural place to where you go in order to get what you want.
Correct.
And that is, I think, sad for a country when we move into that arena.
It is. But you know, I mean, the dilemma is that typically what we get involved in are where people have been injured. And so certainly, you know, it becomes a very difficult ethical, moral dilemma, because you can't necessarily say, well, we are immune to the fact that someone got hurt. You know, so you have to be sympathetic or empathetic.
And justice is a biblical value.
Correct.
I mean, if somebody has been unduly
has
harmed,
been wronged, that's right.
You do want some kind of justice to take place.
Correct.
Ah, but where does it end? That's the problem that right. we're addressing during this segment. You know, one of the things that happened over the last months is the Kavanaugh hearing,
right.
where a man gets accused of something that, you know, half the country thinks he did, half the country doesn't think he did it. Where are we headed, Rich, in your opinion? And if you guys are just jumping on, listeners, Rich Sidori is my guest. He's a general counsel for a local company. Where are we headed with all of these accusations against, you know, especially older white men, which seems like there's a lot of anger against? What's going to happen nationally, in your opinion?
Yeah, you know, what a great question. And I wish I had a great answer. Unfortunately, you know, I think, you know, I'm probably with the rest of the world and the rest of the U.S. trying to understand the direction and the trajectory we're on. You know, as an attorney, I look at it from a constitutional, from a due process, from a rights standpoint. You know, and everyone has the right to a defense, and everyone has the right to be heard. And the concept of due process allows all parties to tell their story. And you know, it's those types of fundamental aspects that are the building blocks and the cornerstone of America and of the United States and of our, you know, political institutions. And you know, you've got what is appearing to happen is a court of public opinion that gets generated by the number of social media posts or the, you know, more frequently, the number of social media reposts, that the more something is liked, the more momentum it gathers.
Gathers and, a life of itself,
correct,
if you will.
Right, right. And you know, oftentimes it appears that we've thrown due process out the window. And, you know, I think we're seeing it, you know, at the risk of pushing into this controversy, we're seeing it in the impeachment inquiries as well.
Yeah, very much.
You know,
so
there are certain rules everyone is supposed to abide by when it comes to trying people and having these issues brought out to the surface. And if you do things either without facts and just make the speculation become the truth, or you do things behind closed doors in secrecy and then leak pieces of information that you want to have to promote your agenda, it really is you know, completely eroding the fundamental building blocks of what we stand for as a country.
Yeah, and what's motivating it obviously is political power.
Right.
And what you want is what you want. And
right.
you'll even destroy a person in order to do so.
Right.
Yeah, I have thought a lot about this. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal this past week of a man who was accused of racism and sexism as a CEO of a large organization, and he was ultimately dismissed. But after they really did the study of whether he did it or not, and of course the social media had already tried him and made him guilty, they found out that he really didn't do it. And the Wall Street Journal ended the article with the one thing this person was guilty of was being 68 years old.
Yeah.
And when you get to the older white guy in the American culture, it looks like he's almost becoming an endangered species. Your thoughts?
Yeah. You know, I mean, so our son Sam is 26 years old, and you know, my wife Shelley and I, you know, often think what will his world be like? You know, he's a great man of integrity, and you know, we love him to death, and he's you know, but I wonder what it will be like, you know, and you know, but similarly, we've got a daughter, Holly, who's 24, and same, a woman of integrity, of valor, you know, but it's different. A male is different than a female, and it really seems culturally like it's become, you know, I don't want to say difficult, but it certainly has become more challenging.
Mm. It's almost like you've had your day in the sun, older white guys. Time for you to get out,
right,
for us to be able to do what we want to do.
Right.
And I don't know if that's helping our culture much. It's obviously causing great division and angst, especially with a president who's 70-something, and the Democrats are nominating people to run against him who are largely 70-something.
Yeah.
I just don't know where it's headed, Rich.
Yeah.
It causes me confusion, especially with my kids, like you have them,
yeah,
as well.
Right, exactly. You know, and you know, what always is the balance is certainly there have been wrongs. And certainly, you know, there are those who have been accused that when it comes out that, you know, at the end of the day, they have done bad things. And so it's difficult to be able to say, well, it's just, you know, a bias towards old white guys right now, because sometimes those old white guys have done bad things.
Yeah.
And so
we shouldn't minimize the Harvey Weinsteins and the Jeffrey Epsteins and all those
exactly
folks.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, if you had to guess where it's all headed in our culture, are we just going to have this kind of division because our society is rapidly changing, or is there a way to heal our land, in your opinion?
Well, turning to my faith aspect of this, I mean, that certainly is what I try to cling to and hold on to and go back to in times like this, you know, where, I pray, and my wife and I pray, that the narrative gets back to you know, praying about it and finding out, you know, what's the biblical thing to do? What's the right thing to do? And as we talked earlier, you know, the justice aspect of this, justice is a biblical concept. And, you know, regardless of the tweets on social media and the postings on social media, you know, let's use that, the biblical aspects of this, as our fundamental and our foundational aspects to really try to address these types of issues that are out there.
And one of the things that I always note when I read the scripture is how in the early church, as it was infiltrated into the Roman Empire from a small Jewish perspective, the people who made up the leadership and the people who made up the church itself had a common bond in Jesus, but the diversity of the church was remarkable.
Right.
You see it in Galatians 3:28, for example, there's neither male nor female, Jew or Greek, slave or free. We're all one in Jesus. And you have these remarkable bodies of Christ with all of this diversity coming together for the purpose of serving the world in the name of Jesus.
Right.
And it looks like to me that's the one thing that breaks down all these barriers.
Well, I completely agree.
Yeah. Well, Rich, when we come back from our next segment, I want to talk to you about your faith and how it became real to you, how it's real to you in the workplace, and some of the things you're doing to let your faith live through you in this broken world in which we all live. Because I think a lot of us, as working people, think that work is off limits for a way we can live out our faith, and
sure,
nothing biblically could be farther from the truth that the workplace is a mission field. And one of my friends once said, you're either a missionary or an imposter. And I love that because, you know, Jesus said, as the Father sent me into the world, so I send you into the world. People of faith should not be challenged by their workplace to fear. They should use their workplace as a way to serve other people. And that's what I want to talk to you about, something I know you've done very well and can be a helpful resource to people listening today, how to be a person of faith in this crazy world. I'm David Chadwick. We'll be right back. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick, and this is News Talk 1110-993-WBT. Welcome back to the show. If you'd like to hear this program in its entirety, please feel free to go to WBT.com, scroll down to the weekend shows, look for the David Chadwick Show, and you can do the podcast from beginning to end. Again, my guest is Rich Sidori. Rich is the general counsel for an organization, company called Waste Quip. He is talking about his faith, and this segment talking about how faith can be lived out in the workplace. So, Rich, the beginning point, obviously, is talk about your faith and how it became meaningful to you.
Yeah, so I mean, as I mentioned earlier in the program, so I grew up in a church-going household in Pittsburgh. You know, my dad was the superintendent of Sunday school and at various times on church council, and my mom played the organ for probably about 40 years.
Oh, wow.
At a very small Lutheran church in the east suburbs of Pittsburgh. And, you know, we would dutifully go to church every Sunday morning. You get dressed and off you go. But it was more rote. It was more routinized than I think I realized only later on in life. And, you know, as I certainly grew and, you know, I really attribute a lot to my wife, Shelley, because she really, you know, we both came to our marriage and relationship, you know, as Christians, but not necessarily knowing Christ. And so, you know, as we walked along that path, then there came times whenever you now understand you have a relationship with Christ and Christ wants to have a relationship with you. And so I can't say that I'm one of those guys that had one of those aha moments, but rather a gradual growing and understanding that, you know, Christ loves me and I love him. And it's just a wonderful relationship. And we brought up our kids that way. And, you know, our son is now married to a wonderful daughter-in-law, Danielle. And so, you know, we're everybody is walking in faith right now, which is wonderful.
Well, it's interesting. People ask me all the time, do I have to have a Damascus Road experience to be a true Christian? And the answer biblically is no. Although in my marriage relationship, I'm like you. I was raised in a Christian home. Dad was a pastor. I went to church dutifully, just like you did every week. I think seeds of faith were planted in my life. It was very routine. But there was a moment when I realized that Jesus loved me and he became a personal friend. And my faith relationship went from rote to a deep relationship. But it was very much a part of a Timothy kind of experience, where biblically Timothy was raised by his mother and his grandmother in the faith, and his faith became natural as a part of growing up. Right. But then you did have Paul with a Damascus Road experience, and my wife is Paul.
Yes.
She was an atheist. She didn't believe. She didn't want anything part of Jesus. And one day, she had a dramatic encounter with Jesus, and it changed her life forever. So the bottom line there is, it doesn't matter how you come to the relationship. God can use all different kinds of ways, but the bottom line of the Christian faith is it is a relationship, not rules and regulations.
Right.
And so you came to a genuine understanding of who Jesus was at what age?
Oh, boy. I would say I was probably in my early 20s. You know, so I, at that point, you know, certainly starting into my career, and, you know, I've tried to carry that as an attorney, and throughout my career, you know, I graduated law school in 86, so I'm probably, certainly much longer in the tooth in my career than I probably would be willing to admit. But, you know, I certainly have carried that throughout my entire career. Mm-hmm. You know, and there have been times where it has been more challenging than certainly in the current role that I'm in. I mean, there have been occasions, you know, where as general counsel or the lead attorney for an organization, oftentimes you are the company's conscience, right? You really have to be the one that sets the moral compass for the company. And there have been some occasions in my career where it somewhat goes at odds with the direction that either the CEO is bringing the company or members of the board or members of senior management. And at that point, it really is a challenge because I know that I have to be, you know, true to myself at the end of the day. I often go back to Joshua 1:9, which for me is my beacon. I mean, it really is. And it's to be, Jesus commanded us to be strong and courageous. And that's, you know, what I really rely upon a lot, and not to be afraid and not to be discouraged, because I know what my role is and I know what I need to do. And, you know, I hearken back to one CEO that I had that I worked very closely with. And, he and I would talk about that. And when I would go into, you know, litigation matters or settlement negotiations or very tough and acrimonious situations that I get involved in as an attorney or general counsel of a company, you know, I have to operate from a very strong foundational position. And, you know, he and I would talk about that openly, that was going to be my guiding beacon, to be strong and courageous and understand that. And in that respect, I've been very fortunate in my career that, you know, while I have had these situations where, you know, it's been a challenge with some moral dilemmas, certainly that situation with that CEO and my current role as well, it's been a situation where we openly talk about our faith. You know, I have prayed with my current CEO. He has prayed with me. It's a wonderful type of situation when you can bring that into the workplace and not be afraid to talk about your faith at work, which a lot of people, I think, live in fear of bringing their faith to work and attempting to keep it separated.
So you would say to those listening who want to take their faith into the workplace, the most important thing you can do is to live it out yourself, have
Correct.
It be an important part of your life, but then let those guiding Judeo-Christian principles outlined in God's Word guide you in your workplace. And there might be some times where that collides with the culture of the workplace. And when that happens, Rich, what should someone do?
Well, you know, I mean, you're either a Christian or you're not. You know, I mean, it's not that you're a Christian of convenience, you know, is how I view it. And so you need to stick to your principles and you need to really have them ingrained in you. And it's not, you know, the Christian aspect is one thing and is one aspect of it and it's overarching. But as you step back, you also have to understand what your moral compass is and what you believe in, and not allow yourself to be pushed in directions that you don't necessarily want to go.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you've got to look yourself in the mirror,
Correct.
Don't you?
That's right.
Now, have you found in your experience that if you do stand for your convictions, and they're generally the right convictions, you will be respected by other people? Yes and no.
Yeah, right. I mean, unfortunately, it's the radio, so you didn't see me like tilt my head side to side. You know, it's yeah. I mean, it is an interesting aspect of it. I mean, it really is, because there are so many complexities that go into the daily workplace. You know, or any aspects of life where people have agendas, and you know, sometimes they're known, sometimes they're unknown. And so, you know, at least being trained as an attorney, what I do is try to look at as many layers of an issue as possible and try to understand particularly where somebody else is coming from.
That's
and,
the whole empathy thing.
Yes.
You jump inside their
right.
skin. You don't try to be you try to understand but also be understood, but it's important
Correct.
To understand where the other people are coming from.
That's exactly right. And not just strategically to help my position as an attorney, but also, you know, to understand where they stand.
Yeah, the breadth of the problem.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So if someone is here listening going, this might cost me my job if I take this stand, but I know it's the right stand to take, what would you say?
You know, that is a very tough question. It really is, because we all have obligations. I mean, you know, and responsibilities, and it's a very tough position. I mean, it's probably a very individual and personal decision. But I always go back to my faith. And
at the end of the day,
right?
You've got to look
exactly
yourself
right.
in the mirror. And the other thing is in Colossians 3:23-24, there are those wonderful verses that remind us all in the workplace that we have a boss, but we have a real boss.
Yeah.
And ultimately, we're answerable to God and God alone. And I really believe if you take the right stand and do the right thing, it may be uncomfortable for the moment, but in the long term, God will honor that
Yes.
because he has promised to do so. And he said, in Colossians 3, don't be someone who's just trying to people please. Do eye service is the word in the workplace, but really believe you have someone you're accountable to in heaven, and that's ultimately the one you want to please.
Agreed.
Rich Sidori is my guest. He's the general counsel for Waste Quip. Jip, Rich, when we come back, let's talk about this subject as we conclude the program. How can people of faith really make a difference in the community? I'm David Chadwick. We'll be right back. What a great word that we ask God every day to fill us up with his love, his grace, his mercy, his kindness. And then when we enter into the workplace, we want to be a dispenser of that love, grace, mercy, and kindness. Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Welcome back to the show. Rich Sidori is my guest. Rich is the general counsel for a company called WasteQuip. We've been talking about a multitude of different subjects, but Rich, the one during this segment that I think would be really important for people as a businessman of faith in the workplace, you can really use your position in the workplace to help a lot of causes that are out there in the world. I know that's one of your heartbeats. You want to be a man of God in the workplace who allows your company and other people with whom you come in contact to give their lives away. And when you do so, you truly make Charlotte and the larger community a better place in which to live. So let's talk about using work as a way to worship God in serving other people. Talk about that.
Sure. So you know, I mean, it for me, it's not only going to work every day. I mean, and I go to work every day with a smile on my face, and I go to work every day and you know, you lift up people, and that's what you do, and you know, you attempt to make it a better place for them. You know, our CEO says it often and means it when he says, I want this to be the best place you've ever worked. And we take that to heart. I mean, it's not just a throwaway line. We truly take that to heart. And in fact, we just had an employee survey and we asked that question of everyone. Is this the best place you have ever worked? So, I mean, there are a variety of ways to live that out. I think it was either last year or 2 years ago in January or February when we were going to have a cold spell in Charlotte. And I learned that the shelters, the city shelters, don't open until the temperature hits a certain level. And it was going to be literally 2 or 3 degrees above that level was the projected temperature for the evening.
But still cold.
Still cold, right. I mean, 2 or 3 degrees doesn't matter to someone who's on the street. But there was a rule,
shivering.
Right, that this is when the city will open the shelters. And so I have a very good friend who sits on the board of the Boys and Girls Club, which is affiliated with the Salvation Army. And I called him and I said, look, what are the needs out there? What does the Salvation Army need? Because my guess is that the Salvation Army will be overwhelmed with people who are cold because they need to get to a shelter and they can't get into a city shelter. And so within 24 hours, I was connected with the person who was running the Salvation Army shelter, and I reached out to my peers, the general counsel in the community, and put a call to action out there and said, what can we do to help this organization that will be overwhelmed with people coming to their doors? And I'll never forget a woman who's a good friend of mine, Stacy Gray, who's general counsel at Belk, immediately stepped up and said, come over. We have towels and washcloths that we can send, we can give to you, because that's what they're going to need. Because I had asked, you know, they needed bus tickets, towels, sheets, this kind of stuff. And so, you know, through a variety of phone calls and emails, within 24 hours, you know, we are taking truckloads of these types of materials over to the Salvation Army shelter. You know, and it's those kinds of things where you know, people are willing to do it. People are open to do it. People want to help and want to, you know, engage in helping the community. You know, you just sometimes need a little kick. You need a little bit of an impetus to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting that you felt like one person can make a difference.
Correct.
And then suddenly somebody else steps up and says, I'll help too.
Right.
And then you have a momentum that allows the community to be served.
Right.
So do you try to bring that social conscience to your company
Yes.
on a regular basis? And if Yes. so, how?
Yeah. So you know, along with other people, that's one of my missions and one of my charges. And so we actually track our charitable giving. And so, you know, we're not a big company. You know, we've got, you know, roughly 2,000 employees, and we're
that
in
sounds
North
big
America.
To me, Rich.
but you know, I guess it's all relative. But you know, so you know, we track where we give our money, and we want to make differences in the community. And so we have the ability to go in and say, what are we doing in a community? No, not only just monetarily, but how are we bettering people in a community? And we track, you know, where our wages are relative to what the average income is in the community, and we want to have our wages to be higher than what is the average in those communities for those work, for those groups of employees. And so, you know, going back to the best place you've ever worked, I mean, that's part of what we do. And so, you know, we want to be able to have a positive effect and positive impact in the community.
Well, we're getting near the end of the show. It's hard to believe, but I'd love to give you a chance to speak to all those out there. My guess is the vast majority of listeners who have jobs,
right.
And remind them that their job isn't something they just have to do, that it could be a calling,
right.
And they could be used by God in the workplace. Rich Sidori, if you could counsel people listening about how to use their work as worship, how to use their job as a vocation, how to use their daily time as a calling, what would you tell them to do?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's find out what you're passionate about. Find out what really drives you. And see how you can combine your work environment with what really your passion is. You know, I'm passionate about something that's in Charlotte called Man Up Charlotte. And this is where, you know, we're attempting to help the fatherlessness of Charlotte, either, you know, physically absent or emotionally absent. And so, you know, for me, you know, it's what you're passionate about. And that's what you really have to do. And but the second more fundamental aspect, I believe, is, as we've talked earlier, the moral compass, understanding, you know, the fact that your feet are on solid ground and they have to be on solid ground, and using biblical aspects in your Christian faith to keep your feet on solid ground.
I don't know where I heard it, but at some point along the way, I heard someone say, every day, find a need and fill it. Find a hurt and heal it.
Right.
And those two little simple phrases have guided me to say to people like you and others, every day we have the chance to intersect with people.
Correct.
And we're in a workplace situation where we're surrounded by other people. Even in our cubicles, there's somebody in a cubicle next to us. So if we would dare be sensitive to say, God, how could I find a need and fill it, find a hurt and heal it. I'm God's instrument in the workplace. And then when you find things like Man Up, which is addressing fatherlessness, which
right.
you're a part of, it makes your life even more successful.
Yes.
Rich, thanks for being with me today.
You bet.
Really appreciate your time, and may you be continued used by God for the purpose of helping this world be a better place in which to live. Rich Sidori, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And everyone, would you do this for me? Would you love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and might? That's the first commandment. As you begin to worship God with everything that is within you, you will find how much He loves you, cares for you, and has a plan for your life. And secondly, then, love your neighbor as yourself. Love that which God loves most in the world. What is that? People with the image of God stamped on their lives, your neighbor, especially the needy and the oppressed around you. And as you love God and love your neighbor every single day, you have a lifetime's worth of work to do. Everyone, I'm David Chadwick. This is News Talk 1110 99.3 WBT. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk with you all next week.